And welcome back to episode 146 of the Weekly Tech Rant with me, Jay.
And me, Carl.
And I'm still struggling with this strange cold that's going on. I can't speak. I'm sorry about weird opening, but I have a rather bunged up approach to life at the minute.
You're not the only one. Opening. The lurgy is in my house.
What a great opening to a tech podcast. I've got a cold.
So I apologize for the sniffles and whatnot.
Yes. We will indeed. This episode is sponsored by Sudafed. No, it's not. Technically, I apologize. It's not. That was just a joke. Yes, we are back for episode 146, and we've got a roundup of tech stories this week. We've got quite a few gaming stories. We're going to talk about an acquisition, and we're going to talk about the online safety bill, the plot of the Andromeda Strain by Michael Crichton appears to have come to life. And we are going to follow up this week with the rumor mill, which is what Carl was talking about last week, which he left us on a cliffhanger about, of the next-gen console from Microsoft. But let's kick things off with a couple of notes on the Microsoft Activision Blizzard deal. Now, if you listened to us last week, we mentioned that it had been given the green light, hadn't we? And, the green light. The CMA had said that they were kind of happy with the revisions, weren't they? And the final ruling is due in a fortnight's time on the 18th of October here in the UK with the CMA. But it's looking very likely that that's going to be cleared, isn't it?
It is, yeah. You know, as the CMA said themselves, you know, they consider the restructured deal makes important changes that substantially address the concerns it set out in relation to its original transaction earlier this year and opens the door for the deal being cleared. Now, they have actually ends today. They obviously went from that statement to then opening a consultation to gain third-party feedback on Microsoft's proposed remedies. So that ends today. And as you said, we should hopefully have a final decision before the October the 18th deadline.
Which would be good, because Microsoft themselves would probably like to close this out, wouldn't they?
It's been going on long enough now. They just want to close that. And, you know, I want some shiny new games on Game Pass.
Me too. But that may not happen, though, because on the other side of the pond, the FTC is trying to block it again, though, isn't it?
So what we had, was it back in, I want to say, July? That was when they went for that. Was it a preliminary injunction, wasn't it?
That's right, yeah.
It fell back in July. The FTC then asked the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals to review the district court's decision, but then it just withdrew it. Its complaint. But now it's reinstated its complaint again. Coincidentally, though, the FTC and the US Department of Justice issued new merger guidelines.
Did they?
Tougher stance on corporate deals. And most of the filing is under seal, so we can't be viewed. But the brief can be seen, and it kind of states that, you know, if this merger is consummated, it would enable Microsoft at a key inflection point in its massive and growing industry to foreclose platform rivals from a leading input provider, Activision, producing some of the industry's most popular games. So they're still taking that same stance that it's too much of a monopoly, isn't it?
But given what we're going to talk about later about corporate mergers, they don't seem to be that worried.
Well, no. Well, maybe they'll bring them up as well and try and stop that. But
we'll see when we talk about that in a minute.
We've got a while to wait for this one, because the initial oral arguments aren't going to be heard until December the 6th this year. So whether I believe Microsoft will probably just going to go and close the deal, and we'll deal with the fallout later.
I would imagine you're right. I think Microsoft will plow ahead with this, given once they've got it signed off in the UK, where that was the major concerns. I suspect they will want to move forward very quickly and will not be bothered by what the FTC is trying to do in court, because as you say, it'll be far more costly for the FTC to try and take them down that road than it is going to be for them to kind of, you know, not do the acquisition and all of the legal stuff that's going on around that as well. So I suspect we'll see more of a press release saying that it's green light than we will saying there's a problem.
Yeah, so, you know, maybe we'll have this wrapped up by the end of October.
Yeah, and also I saw pigs flying yesterday as well.
Did you? Yeah.
Bacon prices have gone up. Anyway, boom, boom. Oh, move on. Anyway, FTC is going to try as much as they can. It is interesting, as you say, though, that new guidance has come out because given the size of this merger, there aren't too many of that kind of magnitude are there really?
No, but surely you can't retrospectively add that. The deal already going through, then halfway through you go, I'm going to put some new guidelines out. You can't do it now. Surely that can't be a thing.
If you're a government, you can do what you want. That's what it appears to be.
I've done that, and we'll talk about that later.
Yeah. Definitely there. But so on one side, we've got potentially a great, great news. On the other side, it's probably not the outcome they're hoping for. But I doubt we're going to see, though, given that, was it Modern Warfare 3? Isn't that out next month?
They bought a gameplay trailer yesterday, but I haven't managed to watch that yet. So I'll do this podcast.
So that's confirmed for November the 10th, I understand. So I doubt, though, we're going to be seeing that, though, in time.
Not day one release, anyway. No.
Maybe retrospective day 100 release, maybe.
Maybe. This year, hopefully. Maybe Christmas.
It would be good. It would be very good indeed if it was. So, but I doubt.
Talking of consoles, though.
Yes.
The other big announcement from the other camp, the Sony PlayStation camp.
Boo.
I wasn't really expecting this, but PlayStation CEO Jim Ryan has announced he's retiring from Sony next year. And the guy that will be taking over in the interim has the best name. It's Hiroki Totoki.
Have you butchered that, or is that wrong?
No, I mean, I'm saying it like it sounds. I have heard it announced on someone else's podcast.
I mean, it just sounds like you're saying the hokey cokey.
I know. He's the current COO and CFO, so he'll also be taking on the CEO role. He's a busy man. Until they find Jim Ryan's replacement. Jim Ryan did put out many statements basically saying, it's been increasingly difficult to reconcile living in Europe while working in North America. And me and you, who travel a lot and we work across different continents, I can understand that. That time difference is a killer.
Yeah.
I think is he 63?
Yeah, he's 63. You say he's been working with Sony since the early 90s. And actually, obviously I'm not as old as him, but it is hard work. And I suspect he is darting back and forth across the Atlantic a hell of a lot more than we are. It is exhausting. It does take a toll. And I'm sure he's got a family, commitments here in Europe. You'd want to try and say that. But I mean, look, he's been with the company a long time. He's overseen, pretty much all of the major developments that Sony have done, haven't they, in terms of the consoles and the gaming, piece. So, I think it's time for a round of applause for Jim.
Definitely.
And maybe time to hand over, given all the stuff that's been going on, with the PS5, with the Microsoft kind of Epic stuff.
It's had a tough couple of years.
It has been a tough couple of years. I wouldn't want to be in his shoes, put it that way.
No, definitely not. So, well done. Good luck and well done.
Indeed.
Great job there.
And while we wait, Mr. Hiroki Totoki-san, as he takes over these rather large shoes. I'm assuming Totoki-san is based in Japan. Is that because he's...
I don't know where he's based. Maybe, but he's going to have the same problem. He's going to be dealing with different time zones than the America and EMEA.
I'm going to have to look him up. Well, only because I didn't do that as part of my research. I'm so sorry.
That's all right.
Here we are, Hiroki Totoki. So he is Sony. So he's the current Sony Group president. I missed that part. Yeah.
Chief Operating Officer and Chief Financial Officer.
Yes, I mean, really, he's very high up already in Sony itself, isn't he? Then really,
he is. It's just doing the CEO as an interim until they find a replacement.
Well, he is a sprightly 59.
Oh, okay, yeah, got a few years on Jim.
a few years, definitely, yeah. But I suspect, by the look of it, yes, he's based in Japan itself. But interesting. Yeah. Okay, so whilst we have a shake-up at the top, talking of big mergers then, kind of alluded to a minute ago, Cisco have splunked $28 billion on buying Splunk itself. Boom, boom.
Nicely we are... done.
Oh, I couldn't resist it. I couldn't resist it.
That was coming.
Oh, you could. Yeah. So Cisco, who... Probably, I'm not. What would you say Cisco were? Are they a networking company or are they a security company?
Well, traditionally, they are a networking company. They've always been a network company, but I think they bill themselves as a security company now, don't they?
They do. Networking, cloud, and cybersecurity solutions is what Cisco, as you say, build themselves as.
Yeah.
And they have just spent $28 billion on the acquisition, or they've announced they're acquiring, I should say, Splunk. Now, if you're unfamiliar with what Splunk is, you're thinking, what are you on about? This is not the podcast for you. However, if you've just temporarily forgotten what Splunk is, let me remind you. So Splunk is a SIEM, so a security information event management platform. Basically, it is a large bucket, isn't it, Splunk, where you
chuck all your logs.
You chuck all your logs into it. You take in your data sources from basically all kinds of things, network, firewalls, applications. And it's really basically data analysis that gives you machine ability to analyze machine-generated data. Now, when it first came out, it was purely basically a log bucket. But over recent years, they've done many acquisitions, and now they've got, you know, a lot of technology and machine learning that allows you to take that data and turn it into useful information, isn't it, really, and that you can then, I guess, apply security rules to, or detect unnormal behavior, you know, user analytics, you know, whether you've been breached, DLP issues, all kinds of stuff Splunk does there. And it's, you know, has been kind of the biggest player in that market for some time, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. And Cisco are paying, I should say, quite a premium. So yeah, they bought them for $28 billion. But before the announcement, Splunk's market cap was only $20 billion. So they are paying $157 a share. I mean, and Splunk's share range has gone from, what, $65 to just over $90 this past year. So that's a big old premium. It makes you wonder if there's a bit of a bidding war going on.
Yeah, but I don't get this, though, because if you go back a few years and you Google this, Splunk, before they IPO'd, when they IPO'd, they said they didn't want to be bought. They wanted to IPO, and they wanted to grow the company, and they had several actions. Fast forward a few years later, most of that original management team, I think, has moved on. Yeah. And as you say, you've got Cisco buying over the odds. And it just seems a bit strange that, you know, it wasn't a company that I expected to be bought. They also have done quite a lot of acquisitions in the last few years. Now, not all of them, I believe, have been very seamless integrations. There's been quite a few discussions about whether or not they've been great. And if you look at Splunk and where they are in the market, and I'm not going to name other competitors because I want to be careful about who we talk about, you wouldn't class them as the leader, I don't think, anymore when you talk about, you know, security events management. There are other players now, aren't there?
There are. The thing I will hear about Splunk is they're very, very expensive. I mean, the joke has been, is that $28 billion Cisco's
renewal
fee for Splunk?
Yeah, that was it.
No, not what they bought, that's just what they own for the year.
Or somebody worked out it was cheaper to buy Splunk than it was to renew them.
That was it. I mean, I've never bought Splunk. I've used it before, but I've heard it is very, very expensive.
Yeah, I understand that. And I think that's the thing. And, you know, when you look at one of the other players in the market who we will mention, because it's talked about at other levels, is that Cisco want to compete with Microsoft now amongst other players in the market space. And obviously Microsoft got Azure Sentinel, you know, as their own SIEM offering, which, you know, they have alongside their other, quite frankly, very varying tools in their security portfolio. This would be kind of playing more to Microsoft than it would do to Cisco. Because now if you take out Splunk in the Cisco piece, Microsoft have just lost a competitor in one respect.
Yeah, they have. And I think it'll be a while before Cisco kind of fully integrates that. I mean, if it does, Splunk must be huge. I mean, I don't know how many employees they've got, but a fair old whack, I'd imagine.
Yeah, I mean, this is going to take some time to go through. You know, this isn't going to be overnight, you know, so we won't be seeing much of this in the first 6 months, but I reckon within a year's time, we'll probably start to see changes in the organization. Now, I did read, and funny enough, I was reading an article on TechTarget. And there was talking there that it wasn't naming anybody specifically, but it was saying some pundits were reckoning that Cisco had bought Splunk to build a large language model or LLM for gen AI use.
Right.
I'm not entirely sure that would be. I mean, in one respect, Splunk is a perfect tool for an LLM, isn't it? Because it is just pure data. But to do that, you're going to have to build a front end that can leverage that data. And that's probably a different piece that Cisco are doing. Because if you look at Cisco, as you say, they're trying to compete in all different areas of networking, you know, SASE. They're trying to talk in, like, you know, cloud security, networking traditionally, of course. They're trying to do, you know, into their, you know, Splunk is more, I guess, in the security operations center than, say, Cisco is. So it's a bit of a weird one. I guess, is it cheaper and easier for Cisco to acquire Splunk than it is for their competitors to build better products?
I don't know. Yeah, it puzzles me, this one. That's a lot of money for Cisco to be spending.
Yeah, because what's Cisco's data market cap? I did have it down here somewhere. Hang on, let me trawl through my quick notes because I did have...
$15 billion, apparently. If it's slightly more than I thought it was going to be.
How much, sorry?
$215 billion.
$215 billion?
Yeah.
Okay, so $28 billion out of that. That's quite a lot of money because... here we are. Yeah, their revenue last year, yeah?
Yeah.
Was $56 billion for 23.
Oh, so 6 months worth of revenue.
Yeah, but that's a lot of change.
Profit. That's revenue, though. Profit.
No, net income was $12 billion.
Okay, yeah. So, yeah, okay.
So, you know, it's a lot of money, isn't it, to gamble? Whether this will fail. So, Cisco has 84,000 employees as of 2023.
Yeah. Splunk has 7,000.
Yeah, so I suspect we may see some loss of loss in Splunk, but yeah, this is definitely an intriguing acquisition, to say the least. And whether or not we will see great products come out of it, I don't know. I'm sure if you work at Splunk, you'll probably be wondering the same yourself, won't you?
Once you finish counting your shares and your profit.
Well, that's true. Well, I haven't got it in the notes, but just talking of dates and acquisitions. So the Broadcom acquisition of VMware closes this month, doesn't it?
It does. I didn't ever thought we'd actually see it go through, but you know what? Nope. I think it is going to.
It is 30th of October.
People at VMware.
Yeah, 30th of October is the day zero. Day one.
I wouldn't want to be there, to be honest.
No, I wouldn't want to be on there at all.
Especially for the poor people in the end user computing unit. I think that's where we're going to see the biggest massacre.
It's interesting, though, isn't it? I mean, just to go off on a little tangent here, talking about acquisitions. The worry, I think, is as you say, are they going to gut the company in the sense of retaining anything to do with data center? So SDDC.
Yeah, I'll keep all that one. It's the EUC stuff that doesn't make sense.
And security, I think.
Well, and the security, yeah. Carbon, was it
carbon black, wasn't it? Yeah.
Do they need that? I think that will be maybe just quietly shut or maybe spun off and sold. NSX goes with the data center stuff, so I think that'll be fine. But yeah, the rest of EUC, it's a weird one. So they spin off EUC as in Workspace ONE, the Unified
Endpoint Management. Yeah.
Great, you could sell that on, or it could be an independent company, and you know it'll probably do fine. But then you've also got, coming out of Umbrella, you've got the VDI stuff. But the VDI stuff requires the server stuff.
It does, which is the desktop as a service, the DAS area, isn't it?
So do they just kill VDI? They can't really sell the VDI part off along with the rest of EUC without having the core virtualization stuff. So I don't know where that will sit.
No. And, you know, if you look at it from the corporate spiel, Hock Tan, isn't he, the chief of... Broadcom has pledged apparently extra R&D cash for VMware. Now,
that's all of it.
Well, yeah. He says for their multi-cloud offerings. So if we've seen recently, VMware have done a lot of talk around they're playing up their alliance with NVIDIA, haven't they?
Yep.
Massive play up there. Talking around and if you've seen all the stuff that came out of... VMware Explore August, that was all around AI, wasn't it? It was around managing AI. It was all AI conversation. Anything to do with EUC is very quiet. Now, the only thing I've seen recently around their EUC offerings was to do with managing the new Meta Quest.
Yeah, that was a slightly weird one.
Yeah, because how many organizations are really buying Meta Quest? Probably not as many as you would like to think.
No, I mean, I'd be interested to see what the Quest 3 being a kind of low price one, but with a full color pass through and apparently AR capabilities. And we're not talking Apple Vision, but close apparently. I'll be interested to see where that plays out and would businesses use that more.
Yeah, I also have to say, I think that they are going to make significant changes to that business. And in 12 months' time, VMware, as we know it, will not exist.
No, no. And they're not going to leave this to carry on for a while before making changes. They'll be straight in there. It's a lot of money they're spending.
And I suspect also they're going to want to go straight in at the enterprise end. So I reckon anybody that's mid-market is probably going to suffer massively.
Yep.
We've already seen a lot of... what's the ELA, you know, sort of agreements being renegotiated. I would imagine they will be looking to capitalize on that existing customer base in the enterprise sector rather than anything else. Some groups will go. It's inevitable. And I suspect they will chop it up as well. So parts of VMware will move under other parts of the Broadcom enterprise, so storage will go to storage, etc. Security, if they don't get rid of it, will go into Symantec. So Carbon Black is dead. I very much think EUC is going to be spun off. It would be ironic, though, if EUC got spun off either into a separate company, because that would be kind of going full circle, wouldn't it?
yes, it would be.
You know, but I imagine. But then again, who would buy them?
I don't know. I mean, Microsoft could buy them. They want usability.
Yeah, but they won't, though, will they? Because they don't need to buy them anymore. You know, 10 years ago, I could have seen that happening.
Yeah,
but not anymore. They don't need it anymore.
No, exactly.
You know, the one thing though is, and I hate to say this, but the one thing is going to suffer is the people, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, the only people I can see actually buying them though, maybe private equity.
Possibly, yeah, that's a good point. There's a lot of those,
as opposed to a current established company buying them.
Yeah, yeah, true. Well, there you go. We will keep you updated on all of the movements in the Cisco Splunk saga. I'm trying to think of a good name here, but I can't.
Say on air anyway.
No. Right, changing track slightly. So if you have been living under a rock, if I said to you the Andromeda strain, what would you think?
You've missed one.
Have I? What have I missed?
You've missed the online safety bill.
Oh, God. See, that's how much I wanted to talk about that, I tell you.
No, it's been sadly for all of us in the UK, you know, the bill has come to pass.
Oh, it has.
And it's now law. So, I mean, we don't have enough time in this entire episode to go over all the things that are wrong with it. But, you know, my gut is the bill's just never really been thought through, has it? The kind of consequences it will have. So, and even when those... if it's been pointed out, the government's kind of just stuck its fingers in its ears like a child rather than have a properly reasoned debate. But I mean, the big part of it was the magical backdooring of end-to-end encrypted chat was one of the big ones that were shown all over the media, wasn't it? Was it back last month? They kind of backed down on that to say that, you know, we're not going to enforce that part of the law, you know, and Apple and Signal and WhatsApp won't have to put backdoors in their encrypted messaging system.
Hallelujah.
But, you know, those parts of the law are still in there, in the bill, even though the government, you know, have said they're not going to do it. They could at any time. And the bit that also gets me, and I think no one, I don't want to say, is that our general election is only 2 years away. You know, what's to stop the next government from using those powers? You know, it's enshrined in law now. So even though the current government says it won't do anything, the next government might change its mind.
But then, you know, just to play devil's advocate, you almost like to think perhaps maybe somebody in the next government might have a bit of common sense and be like, this is never going to work. But, you know, then again, stranger things have happened.
Come on, wake up. That's not going to happen. Do you know our government?
No, you're very true. All of our governments, respective of political parties.
they're equally crap when it comes to technology and thinking.
They are. But I mean, you know, when we talked about this before, we talked about things like the ability that, you know, it could make it illegal for Apple to issue security updates without government approval.
Oh, yeah, that's the is that Ripper Act, isn't it? That's kind of separate from the on-site deal, but that's going through, yeah. And that whole thing about
that one, it's just craziness.
You can't tell anyone about the patch until we've said you're okay, and we'll let you install it on the devices.
It's ridiculous. Crazy. But there you go. Well, let's see what happens. You know, you're right. A general election could clear a lot of this out, but I suspect it probably won't.
No, not at all. So anyway, you were talking about the Andromeda strain.
Yes, I was. So if I said to you the Andromeda strain, then what would you think?
Aliens, bacteria.
Oh, close. Yes. So the
not very well for humanity.
No. So the 1969 novel by Michael Crichton, or the 1971 film, or if you're more relevant, there was a 2008 miniseries, was about an outbreak of a deadly extraterrestrial microorganism following a return of a capsule from space. So a military satellite that picked up an extraterrestrial contaminant returned to Earth. And basically, there's a long story where basically there's something in there that kills people. Now, you may think I'm thinking, that's science fiction. What are you on about? Yes, but last month, NASA did exactly that. They returned a sample from an asteroid and dropped it onto Earth. The OSIRIS-REx mission, which was launched way back in 2016, finally returned its capsule, didn't it? And it's impressive. I can't say anything else on it. So apparently they've opened it, but they've collected too much dust or stuff, as they put it.
Right.
So the capsule itself, the return capsule, effectively what they did was they flew close enough to the asteroid to bump it. And then, you know, whatever they picked up a load of material, I think it was like, I want to say 250 grams or something. I can't remember.
Something like that, yeah. It was huge amounts in the grand scheme of things.
But enough to, you know, and now once they get it back, they're going to be sharing it out with other scientific establishments around the world, but apparently they've got it opened, and there's a lot of black material around it, which they're unsure what it was. They think obviously it's the material from the asteroid, but apparently they've captured more than they anticipated, which is just brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. The whole thing kind of reads like a sci-fi novel.
It does. It's brilliant, isn't it?
It is. But it was a 1.2 billion mile round journey from the asteroid Bennu.
Yeah.
They landed this in the Department of Defense Utah Test and Training Range. We've done that in DCS, not landing alien substances, but flying around it. They then sent what recovery teams did, didn't they? Just whisked the capsule away by helicopter to a clean room where they disassembled part of it and then used a nitrogen purge, which is nitrogen into the canister to protect the sample, basically keep the Earth's atmosphere out of it. Then they transferred it to Johnson Space Center in Houston to be opened and those samples analyzed. Sounds very much like a bad sci-fi movie.
I mean, I've seen enough of these films. I know exactly what's going to go wrong here.
No, watched a sci-fi movie here.
I know. Surely the irony isn't lost on these guys, but it was quite funny. I think what's even more impressive is the spacecraft has now dropped off the capsule, turned around, and is off to chase a new target called Apophis. I think I've pronounced that terribly.
We'll write that in the notes because we've now butchered it.
But it's become the OSIRIS Apex mission now. So it's going to fly.
I didn't realize the whole thing had gone back off. I thought the whole thing just came through the atmosphere and landed. No,
it's basically dropped off its container and it's turned around and it's now chasing another asteroid, which apparently is one of the most famous in the solar system because it's going to come close to Earth in a few years' time.
So it's obviously got a couple of these capsules then it can capture.
Well, I don't know if they're going to be doing that this time. So this time it's going to fly in 2029, around April, it's going to fly, or the asteroid, excuse me, it's going to fly within 30,000 kilometers of Earth, yeah?
Yep.
Which apparently, I didn't realize this, several of our weather satellites orbit at.
Okay.
Though I think that must be wrong. 30,000 kilometers sounds a long way away. That must be closer than that, surely. Apparently it's the closest flyby of an asteroid for 1,000 years, and OSIRIS Apex is going to follow it around the Earth and do more science observations on it. And then, you know, which is, I think it's run out of sampling equipment, but it's definitely hasn't finished with in terms of its sensor equipment. So, yeah, very cool. Very cool. And we'll let you know, of course, if the zombie apocalypse does start, we'll put out a special.
If we've not been eaten by said zombies, we will inform you.
Yes, we're public service broadcasting at its best, isn't it? Oh, what a day. This is going the wrong way. Okay, so before we get to the tech rant, rumor mill, and Carl's final little update, Epic has laid off 800 people. Apparently, according to them, they've spent more money than they've earned. Now, is anybody surprised, given the amount of free games they give away?
No, no. And obviously, whatever the cost of the legal bill,
yes.
The whole Apple thing. But yeah, they have laid off, 830-odd employees? So 16% of Epic's total workforce. The poor staff were kind of informed of layoffs by an internal memo, followed by a kind of all hands meeting. So it does seem like they're, you know, laying them off properly. They'll get 6 months severance pay, health insurance. They'll accelerate their vesting stock, so any stock options they have will all be kind of cashed in for them. But yeah, you're right. They said, you know, for a while now they've been spending way more money than they earn, investing in the next evolution of Epic and growing Fortnite as a metaverse-inspired ecosystem for creators. Yeah, he'd kind of been optimistic that they could power through, but yeah, that was clearly unrealistic, he says. Yeah, I mean, they basically say that Fortnite has kind of grown again, but not in such a profitable way it was before. I think that's in part because they're doing this whole creator content thing, where they share revenue with the creators who are making the content, so Epic aren't getting as much in their bank there, are they?
No. And they apparently Tim Sweeney said that this will financially stabilize the business when this round of layoffs.
But it's not just that though, aren't they? They're spinning off some of the other companies. So
that's correct. Yeah.
They own Bandcamp, which is kind of a music marketplace.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
My son uses that for creating music and stuff, not selling it all, but it's quite a good bit of software for creating stuff. So he uses that. They're getting rid of Super Awesome, including its advertising company, so that's going independent. So that's another 250 employees on top of the previous 850 that will be leaving Epic. Not a great day for Epic.
No, and I have to say, their business model is bizarre, isn't it? I mean, I know they've got the store, they've got everything else, but it does seem that the whole thing is basically built around Fortnite.
Yeah, the whole thing is. I mean, I've not looked on their store recently to see what free games they're giving away. They kind of got worse and worse, and I can kind of stop looking.
I was just going to say, exactly. You've hit the nail on the head. I was just going to say it to you. It used to be there was fantastic games there all the time, but I too have. I noticed that I had a quick look, and I was like, God, the quality of the free games is awful.
What have we got? Godlike Burger. Right. I'm not even sure what that one's about. Let me in. In Godlike Burger, you run the craziest restaurant in the galaxy. Okay, so it's like that cooking game, but
Flip Burger Flipper or whatever it was. Yeah,
yeah, I know that one. Coming soon, Blazing Sails and Cube Ultimate Bump. Yeah, there's nothing really gripping there.
No, I am. I have to say myself, I'm not overly impressed by it at all.
No, obviously, free game's a free game, but you know, I must admit, I kind of went there just to take money off Epic rather than playing the game. But yeah,
I can't even agree with you on that one.
Just because they were annoying me, so I'm like, well, I'll take some money out of your pocket whether I play it or not. Yeah, that's maybe me being slightly mean, I suppose. But yeah, you're right. They're giving away a lot of free games. It obviously costs them quite a bit of money to go with the publishers, and they did the whole exclusive things quite a lot, haven't they, where they've just, it's been years or two before we've got to play the games we want unless you actually bought it from Epic.
Yeah, I whether Epic or, you know, I think Epic as a store is not one that I particularly use very often. In fact, very rarely now would I say I go there. I think they've had say there's one or two exclusives. Talking of exclusives, Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 and 2, do you remember which was demo, yep, which was exclusive on there, is now available on Steam.
Oh, okay. I think I got that for the... Or was that a new Tony Hawk's game? It was a remake.
Remake one that came out, you know, which was really good, but only on Epic.
Yeah.
It's now on Steam, which I suspect it will probably show up on the Xbox at some point. But I think if you've got a Steam Deck, how cool is that?
Yeah, that would be a good game to play, definitely.
Perfect on Steam Deck, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, talking of the Epic Games Store, I rebuilt my PC, two or three weeks ago. I forgot to even install the Epic game launcher. I just didn't even register. I've got a load of games there. I just didn't register.
Oh, Yeah, because there's nothing on there. I mean, I was thinking that as well. I've got loads on there, but I had a look. I've got none of them installed.
No, me neither.
Yeah. No, so on that note then, it's probably a chance for us to move over to the... Where is it? Hang on a minute. The rumour mill and the cliffhanger you left us on at the end of last episode.
Ah, yes. So we obviously had the leak of the mid-refresh, didn't we, to the Xbox. But also in that leak, Microsoft's own leak, was their ideas around a next-gen Xbox due for tentatively 2028. And it's they're calling it a cohesive hybrid compute console. So, but the juicy bits are... What does that mean? I don't know. They're looking by the... end of this year to nail down the hardware, but their ideas are for a CPU. We're even going to go ARM 64, which will be a big departure from the current x86, x64 kind of architecture, or just to go straight in with AMD's Zen 6, which will be out by that point. It'll be a balance of big little CPU cores, which is where most stuff, even desktops, going nowadays, isn't it? See, GPU, they're saying either co-design with AMD, which is what their current ones are, or just grabbing the license, the IP for Navi 5 or whatever that is when that comes out. So it could just be taking one of the off-the-shelf graphics cards and sticking it in. They'll be introducing a NPU, so a neural processing unit for ML, machine learning kind of stuff. I mean, they're talking about next-gen DirectX ray tracing, dynamic global illumination, all sorts of fancy words for shiny graphics. but they're also talking about having a FinOS, so maybe a sub $99 device you can plug in. I'm going to presume stream from the cloud on it.
Well, that would make a lot of sense, wouldn't it? Given where we are now, given the whole xCloud piece, it would make a lot of sense, yeah.
It is. And they're talking about enabling new levels of performance beyond the capabilities of the client hardware alone. So even if you have got the full fat Xbox, whatever we're going to call it, they're kind of indicating that a lot of stuff will be calculated in the cloud and streamed down to you, even if you're playing a local game.
What do you think?
It'd be interesting to see where it goes, but I suppose if they are doing that, that's more and more that you need a decent internet connection.
This is true.
2028 might be a bit more stable, but it's not a given. Still in parts of the UK, you can get some terrible internet connections.
And I was just going to say, I think, even parts of the US and other developed countries, it's probably the same conversation as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
Isn't it given that everybody has a solid broadband connection? But
There's a difference from being online enough that it can authenticate that you are who you are and the game you're trying to play is legit yours versus needing that connection to stream assets and computational stuff back down to your console. It takes a lot more bandwidth.
Yeah, that's a whole different kettle of fish. But as you say, 2028, maybe they're bargaining on that most of their consumers would have that.
But it will be interesting to see if they switch to an ARM 64 architecture and what that means for backwards compatibility, because they've always been very, very good at that. You can still take your Xbox 360 games and play them on the latest Xbox, which is more than you can do on the PlayStation.
Well, we're not getting down that rabbit hole.
Exactly.
Okay, very interesting. So that keen to see where that goes, but so what was it, as you said, hardware design next year, dev kits and stuff with a launch 20, we probably should see it
a couple of years before dev kits, maybe 2 years before launch, especially if it's a different architecture.
Interesting to say the least. Well, look, there was always going to be another console coming, wasn't there? We knew that for a fact.
What would be the name, though? This is the question. Where do they go from here?
The
next PlayStation will be PlayStation 6. We know that one. But what about the Xbox? Yeah. It's all over the place naming.
Kind of shot themselves in the foot with the X naming, haven't they?
Yeah.
Well done, Microsoft. You really... Oh, what are we going to call it? Xbox... Z? No, no. The Xbox Y? No. Yeah, Y indeed.
Why?
And on that note, that's probably a good place for us to wrap up for today. We'll be back in probably about a week or so's time for episode 147, where we're going to cover the Google and Meta events and some updates on that. Of course, you can still find us on X/Twitter at Weekly Tech Rant and all of our show notes at techrant.online. And of course, wherever you get your podcast from, please tell your friends. Give us a little shout about it. We appreciate that always. So on that note then, I've been Jay.
And I've been Carl. Have a good evening all.